Welcome, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm your host, Paul Niefer, and today we're joined by Mark Faust. He is the CEO and founder of Echelon Management International based in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Mark, how are things looking in Ohio right now?
Well, finally the weather's turned and it's cold, and but classic Cincinnati fashion, it'll warm up here in a few days. So it's always changing.
Yeah, I'm actually, as we tape this, I'm down in Phoenix, and it's almost cold down here. It's like 50 degrees, but by about 10 o'clock, it's 70 or 75. Yeah. So it's pretty nice. But after I'm done here, I get to go back home, and I'm sure it'll be about 30 degrees or something like that. And I've been on the road. I think this is my 40th day of being on the road. So I'm looking forward to getting back home for a few days at least. So,
quite the vagabond. That's cool.
Yeah. And you know, this is the longest business trip I've ever taken. I, back in 14, I had a 22-day trip. I was home one day and then a 21-day trip, but, I've never been on the road this long at one fell swoop. So, and plus I was sick for part of it. So, but enough about me. This podcast is really about you, Mark. So why don't we start off with your background, where you grew up, college, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I'm a lifetime Cincinnatian, actually sixth generation. And I didn't go far for the basics in life. I came out of University of Cincinnati and got my first consulting job in downtown with a national human resource consulting firm. And it was there that the owner of that firm introduced me to a variety of turnaround CEOs, which was the impetus for the angle I took in kicking off my own business that I always wanted to do. And the same year I started my business, I got married to a local girl, and we tried to have kids and couldn't. But after a few years and giving up, then boom, we had five kids, and they're 28 through 20 now. And most of them have moved down to Florida, and so we just have two left. But so for 32 years, I've run Echelon Management. We have worked with 300 different companies, and a good chunk of those, probably about almost 40%, have been in agriculture. But we focus on no one industry. It's really about growth. I'm a growth advisor, and my other colleagues on the team we're all basically growth advisors working holistically with companies to help them accelerate their growth. And growth is a relative term. It's different to every company and person, really something they have to identify for themselves, what the ideal growth trajectory can look like.
Yeah. Especially when you say growth, I think we tend to think of revenue, but really it could be revenue. It could be other things that are more important to the company. But again, I think if they key in on those things, revenue naturally follows if they do a good job of growth or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, top line, bottom line, but also valuation is something I'm trying to get the owners that I work with to understand and appreciate the importance of the valuation of their company or companies. And that's a whole different dynamic and focus. And it causes you to set a different set of goals and objectives. So, every one of us who owns a company is going to exit it at some point, whether we want to or not. So, and most people exit well before they ever planned. It just comes up on them, whether it's through age or health or opportunity that they're approached and it's too good to turn down. But in any event, it's something we should all be planning for.
Well, good. And actually, you've written a couple books. Why don't we just do a quick overview of those books? The first one is
Growth or Bust.
Growth or Bust. And I think actually it's Growth or Bust, and then it's got a tagline on it, but I'll let you go through that one.
Yeah, Proven Strategies to Grow Your Business. In that book, we basically talk about innovations that can be implemented in management, marketing, and sales, And we have four chapters in each of those different areas and dozens of different ideas in each about how to accelerate performance in your company through those innovations. So, you know, a lot of people think to grow a company, you just sell more. Yes, okay, that may be. But, you know, before we get there, we talk about the innovations in management. You got to talk about culture, role clarity, objectives clarity, having all seven areas of objectives identified, et cetera. We'll talk about that later. But in Growth or Bust, we talk about very specific things like in proposals, when you propose to a prospective customer, just offering three options, a gold, silver, and bronze, is just one of dozens of different things you can do that can up your average sale. And you may not bring on more customers, but you can grow the company just by doing something like that. That's a growth lever. High Growth Levers, our next book. That book is more of a strategic book. In fact, we have a six chapters to each of the three areas of what I think are the significant high growth levers that most any business can take advantage of. First being strategy. Most of us have not fully fleshed out our strategy and implemented all the strategic thinking tools that are available to us, and we'll go into some of those later. And then the second area, culture, the improving the culture of a company is as Drucker said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And the third area, innovation in general, people don't realize innovation can apply to every facet of the company. So nothing could be, and a quick definition of innovation is just creating a new dimension of performance. Well, you can do that in invoicing or compensation or not just product and services. So those three high growth levers, we go into how to accelerate their being taken advantage of throughout your organization.
Okay. And those can be found either at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, et cetera?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, okay. If somebody contacts me, I'll just send them a digital copy for free.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And well, speaking of that, how would they be able to contact you?
So my website, growthorbust.com, is the easiest one to get to. For echelonmanagement.com, which is a little harder to spell for most. But you can reach me at my email, mark@em1990.com. So M-A-R-K at E as in echo, M as in management, 1990 like the year we started,
okay.
.com.
Okay. And then, you know, I think as coming out of these books, you also refer to a turnaround mindset. Why don't we go through what you mean by that?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the consulting firm I was with, I met a variety of turnaround CEOs. In fact, even John Pepper, who was the impetus for my first book, Growth or Bust, I met him at that organization. And He was the CEO of P&G when they had to go through a turnaround around the year 2000 or so. He actually came back after leaving as CEO. But what I learned, I asked most all these CEOs a variety of questions, one of which being, can you do this in a healthy company? And they almost always would say, yes, absolutely. And I would ask about examples where they did that. And there was something that I said to one of them that kind of clicked. I said, so really what you do, whether it's a healthy company or a company that could be on the ropes and on the verge of bankruptcy or actually in bankruptcy, you create a sense of hope and you get them into a new mindset. You get them into a turnaround mindset. And when his eyes lit up, I was like, wow, I'm onto something here. In fact, my publisher said that's the reason that they published the books. It's a novel concept. And I was the one who coined that term and trademarked that term, turnaround mindset. So the point being, though, is that the first thing, in fact, it's the first step in strategy. There used to be a book out there called Hope is Not a Strategy, which is absolute BS. You know, strategy in three words is vision, divergence, and focus. I'll explain that later. But in creating a vision, the first step of strategy, a picture of the future, you have to have hope that you can do so much better. And that's what propels you into the innovation cycle. So any event, you know, hope is key. And but the turnaround mindset takes a step further, and that is we can get out of this and we can be in a great situation no matter how dire it is. And so think about that. Throughout your life, most all of us have been in situations where we're like, wow, whether it's a relationship situation, family's health situation, financial situation, or in your business, you're wondering, what is it going to take to get out of this? And you got out of it. You had a turnaround mindset. You knew that, you know, the sun would rise tomorrow and you would be okay. There's very few things that really threaten our life throughout life. And in reality, we're called to go through those times of turbulence and be leaders. And we are all called to be leaders in various cases and throughout life. And so that, I think, is a tool that we should all use from time to time about creating that sense of hope in ourselves and then inspiring others to have that sense of hope and that things can be better. And you're starting to cast the first aspects of vision. You're starting to take the first steps of strategy when you apply the turnaround mindset.
Since this is sort of a podcast related to farming and so on, how could this type of mindset help a farmer or farm operation be more profitable, be more efficient, and so on?
Well, I've always thought that farmers are some of the best business people in the world because they have to go through more turbulence more frequently than most any other business. And so the undulations of markets and weather, et cetera, are the type of thing that I think make farmers the most some of the best examples of the turnaround mindset. And so I've had the privilege of working with literally many dozens and dozens of the world's largest, best run family owned farms, tens of thousands, even 100+ thousand acres in a few cases. And, you know, as I listen to them talk about their vision, where they've been, their ups and downs and the ebbs of their business, you know, I hear great stories and examples of how they applied the turnaround mindset. But think about it, you know, many listening out there have gone through years of not making much profit or anything at all, losing even, and then yet coming back. And so then you have your times of abundance as well. And we kind of plan to even all that out. And that's a really healthy that creates a long-term thinking. And I think is a great example of why farmers are the best business people in the world. They are ready to suffer a year or two or three of turbulence. And certainly we're in that right now. We're at one of the more challenging times in the industry for a variety of reasons. World, you know, geopolitical things going on, et cetera, and input prices, et cetera, and whatnot, supply chain issues. And then, of course, here we go with the weather this year. So, yeah. And in just this year, I've talked to a couple dozen different farmers out there about some various projects I'm working on. And not everybody's having a bad year. I mean, one 25,000 acre guy down in Kentucky was telling me how many acres they just plowed under. But then up in northern Illinois, I know somebody with about 20,000 that is having about their best year ever.
Yeah.
And so you never know when it's going to be, but you keep applying the basics of the business and playing a conservative game. And looking for innovations of product and management constantly. And that's what the turnaround mindset forces you to get more strategic and forces you to get more innovative. And it's through innovation that you're going to create, you know, increased profitability over the long haul. And that's why you really got to open up to every aspect of the business. It's not just looking for the latest, greatest hybrid, you know, and acquiring new acre. It's about everything from how you manage your team, your family, your finances, and really having more of a CFO mindset as well. And so those are the, you know, keys to growing the business in agriculture, as most listeners out there know.
Yeah, I had an interesting podcast a while back, and the person had brought up the fact that, you know, in a farmer's career, they might only be able to turn inventories 40 times. You know, in business, you know, like in a retail business, you might turn it 40 times in 3 years, or in some other businesses, you know, you're going to turn the inventory two or three or four times a year. So you're right, that farmer has to have that sort of long-term mindset, because some of the things that they may want to implement might take 2 or 3 years just to get through the inventory process to even determine whether it works or not.
And
you're right. Farmers definitely have a long-term mindset. I think that mindset maybe has gotten a little shorter as we've had all these, you know, a little bit more rapid changes, it seems like, over the last few years, you know, between, you know, we had, you know, during Trump's years, we had the turmoil with China and so on. And then we go into the COVID, and then we come out of COVID, and then we have the supply chain issues that you brought up, and we got the Ukraine conflict going on, and all that affects the farming or the outlook for farmers.
You know, one example of, you know, what I get inspired by all the clients I work with and learn something on every project. But I, you know, with most all my clients for 32 years, I've always talked about long-term objectives, and that all of us, in fact, there was a concept I stumbled on with these turnaround CEOs about setting stretch objectives. And so here's the first little growth tactic that would apply to anybody in any business, or even on, you know, the kids' soccer team. But that's to set objectives with this little twist on them. And that has to do with setting your stretch objective, not just your regular target objective. And so you know, we'll call it an MVP in most cases. And by that, I mean, you have your minimum target that you will hit, but then set a visionary target and then a primary target, MVP. And so too often we just set targets, or we don't set them at all too often. And but here's something that will improve your performance. It will improve the performance of any team when you start doing it, is ask them, what do you think is our absolute minimum target that we should hit? And in many cases, we should be setting objectives more collaboratively and more Socratically. You'll be surprised. Sometimes your teams will set targets much higher than you would.
Yep.
And so that's where you should start. But know what your minimums are before you go into that dialogue. But get the minimum target, then ask them, what do you think's the stretch? What do you think if all the stars align, things go as well as they possibly can? You know, we hit the maximum that you can imagine we can hit on this objective. What is that? And you capture that. And after they've just stretched their thinking about that visionary thought and target, now ask them, okay, what's our primary target? Okay. And then bam, you've just probably increased performance on whatever that factor is that you were dialoguing about. And you can do that with everything. Now, I'm going to add one more thing there. I saw this in great display one time with a farm I visited, but I was talking to these two brothers about, you know, setting 20-year and 10-year objectives. And they started to smile, and, you know, we had hit some great, you know, planning tools and kind of implemented those, and everything's going well. And I go, well, what are you smiling about on this? And, well, we walked back to, you know, this other office they had around the corner, and there it was, you know, 20, 40, 20, 30, 20, you know, and they had some objectives there. So they kind of were doing it already, but not a lot of people do that. And yeah, that was the only time in agriculture I ever saw that kind of long-term planning. So the point being, though, is there's a lot of companies out there, like Toyota has 100-year objectives. There's one of the oldest cemeteries in North America is here in Cincinnati, Spring Grove Cemetery. They started with a 500-year plan. They've actually had several presidents of the United States that have been on the board there, and it was part of the reason it had such good planning. But now, you know, the it's not only one of the biggest and most well run, but it's self-financed, you know, in perpetuity. So point being is, when you set these 50-year objectives and 20-year objectives, it changes the way you operate on a day-to-day basis many times. And people need to be doing that as well. And so that's a bit of a stretch exercise as well. I even ask people, entrepreneurs especially, you know, when do you think you're going to die? You know, come up, all of us have a number, 96 years old, what is it? And as soon as you write down that number, then I say, you know, with the advances in medicine and with the way things have been going, you know, decade after decade, you're going to live longer than that, odds are. Because by the time you get there, you know, people just will have more access to healthcare, et cetera, whatever. So, but you think about, okay, at 90, if it's 96, whatever it is, odds are it's probably going to be 100, you know, for folks that might be in their 40s, and have them set some objectives that have to do with the last years of their life even. And then all of a sudden that stretches their thinking for 3-year objectives clarification and 1-year objectives or season to season objectives clarification. So just a couple of stretch exercises, the MVP and setting objectives decades down the road.
Yeah. I like that MVP. Like you say, when you, if you just set the minimum, well, if you hit that minimum, oh, we've succeeded. But if you set the visionary one and then the primary one, that does tend to stretch your team and they should be able to respond better. Certainly you're going to get better than the minimum, I would think.
Yep. Okay. You know, things happen though. For example, there could be some economic situations that hit. So you are going to maybe even miss your minimum.
Yep.
But what happens is now that you've set a minimum and you see you're not going to hit it or you need to do something to maybe try to hit it, that forces more innovation. And so there's a variety of financial objectives that I find that most good farmers are doing. But there are 7 areas of objectives. We should maybe dive into that right now, too.
Mark, let's go ahead and take a break for a sponsor message. That's a good segue. Let's do our break for a sponsor message. And then we'll dig into some of those resources and some of those options that you want to go over. So let's go ahead and take a break right now.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm your host, Paul Niefer, and we're going to rejoin our conversation with Mark Faust from Echelon. Let's see, did I get it right? Echelon Management Echelon. International. I got it. So, Mark, I think you were just getting ready to go into what I think it was 7. Well, I'll let you dive into it.
Yeah, the 7 essential areas of objectives. So, yeah, and there's foundations for this that go all the way back to Peter Drucker and, who coined the phrase of management by objective. He didn't much like that phrase. It was misinterpreted. But the areas of objectives were absolutely essential. And all 7 really need to be set by every organization, whether it's, well, I was just working with U.S. Cyber Command, and all 7 of these apply to that quasi-military organization. Or a nonprofit, it doesn't matter. A religious organization needs to set objectives in all 7 of these areas. And the first area of objectives is in market and marketing objectives. So these are strategic objectives. You know, who is our ideal customer? Are we focusing enough on the right markets and channels, et cetera? And there's a variety of objectives in that area that you need to clarify. Here's a phone call from a grower I'm working with right now. Anyhow, the next 2 areas are areas that rarely companies have identified objectives. So the second, and these are in order of priority, is innovation objectives. What are the most important areas of the business that you need to innovate and improve? And he had an urgent thing, so I got that taken care of. But all of us have innovation objectives, whether it's in how we run the business or how we're pricing, whatever it may be. But just even thinking about what should we innovate quick, and the quick way to do that is think about your biggest problems and constraints. You know, every business is kind of a pipeline of flow, and think about where you have the tightest constraints in that pipe, because you can only have so much flow go through the entire pipe based on the tightest constraint. That's the theory of constraints. And so that's where you would probably begin innovating in your business. And the next area, another one that rarely have I seen objectives codified and written up and managed, but cultural objectives. You know, what is it, what does the environment of your workplace need to be to attract and retain the best talent in the marketplace? That's a critical area of objectives to have clarified. Now, in the next couple areas, most people have some objectives clarified. The fourth area is resource objectives, and there's four areas of resource. You've got human resource, physical resource, financial resources, and IT resources. And so there are objectives you need to clarify there, and that helps you to plan and identify, you know, what the profit needs to be. So, for example, you need to think, you know, 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years out, what are the physical resources we'll need to manage the growth on the farm, you know, whether it's equipment or whatever. And you'll know that if we're going to grow by 30%, that there's going to be additional physical requirements there, human resource requirements. And so, in fact, in human resource planning, we should all create an org chart, not just of where it is now, but where we see it in 3 years, maybe 5 years. What will happen when you do that? People will pop up that fit perfectly into that org chart, and you are going to be hiring or recruiting or teeing up people far in advance of what you might normally do. So create the org chart of the future. The next area of objectives is the what we call the productivity objectives. And so for all those resources, you need to identify how do we know that we've been adequately productive with whether it's this team, these people, or these physical resources that we're managing, or even financial resources, because it's a balance between the three areas of people, money, and things that mm-hmm. we're constantly doing. And yep. If you put too much into any one of those areas, you're not effectively managing. And if you just get it 30,000 feet at least every quarter with your business, and think about the balance between those three areas. How do we need to rebalance it? Where do we want it to be next year or 6 months down the line and 3 years down the line? You know, that's going to give you a perspective and then force you to set productivity objectives that are adequate, as well as profitability objectives that are going to be adequate as well. The next area we don't see clarified nearly often enough has to do with community and social responsibility objectives. So this isn't just about how are you going to tithe or give back to your local community. This is also about the community of the industry. And so, for example, when I worked with Hakey Manufacturing, they were a $70 million company there in Clarion, Iowa, back about 12 years ago or whatever. And in 3 years, we almost tripled the size of the business to $200 million. And John Deere had to buy us because we were doing such a great job in regards to the culture and community and social responsibility objectives. So not only were they sowing back into the town of Clarion, but they were sowing back into the industry and engineers that were coming up at the schools, as well as engineering societies and so forth. And at first, they couldn't recruit an executive or an engineer from John Deere to save their life. Later, they had so many John Deere resumes that the John Deere was bleeding people, and was one of the reasons John Deere had to buy them. Because they had a great culture and they were sowing back into the community of their industry so strategically. We made sure, Alan Hagee did a great job of of identifying what he wanted to achieve. And a lot of his 10-year vision points became reality in 12 or 18 months. So I'll come back to visioning later on, if you will. But the last area has to do with profitability requirements. And the real point I love to make here is, first of all, profit doesn't exist. All profit is future fixed costs. And when you think of it that way, you manage it a lot more effectively. So when you think about all the requirements of growth, you know, the physical and human resources you'll need in the future, you'll conserve and preserve. And again, I'll give kudos here to, you know, the leaders in agriculture. I think farmers are the best managers in the world, literally, because they do a better job of this than most. So I think this area has done pretty well in the industry. But if you haven't identified profitability requirements, and it's not going to be a year-to-year thing, it's more of a undulating five-year cycle. How do we want the profits to look over the next 5 years? What do we need them to be if we want to grow to this size or develop these other areas of the business? And so, and one of the things I skipped over in the first area of marketing is an important point that hit me between the eyes after interviewing a few dozen growers, of, you know, some of the world's largest and best growers. I worked with Family Farms Group, and they had, you know, almost 100 teams of, you know, some of the largest and best run farms in North America. And it hit me that every one of them didn't just have one business, but on average, they had about 3.5 businesses. And so growers tend to be some of the most entrepreneurial people mm-hmm. in the world as well. Yep. And it's hit me that I've noticed the best CEOs and the best business people are really just great entrepreneurs. And so whether it's somebody running a Fortune 500 company, like John Pepper, I mentioned, he was entrepreneurial, or it's our world's greatest growers, they're great at discovering new businesses. And when you start to realize that most growers have a multiple of businesses, and each one needs its own strategy, its own vision, and its own set of these seven areas of objectives, you'll do a better job of managing it and not being overwhelmed by it. It's different from with every grower, but I've seen growers out there that, you know, they might have their row crop business, and then they've got their cattle perhaps, but they don't just, you know, raise cattle, but they've created a business on the side, a mail order business, and they're yep. selling something that's unique in the marketplace. And so they've got that business. And then mom came up with an idea, and dad's in it too, and the kids are helping on an apparel business. And for crying out loud, here they are making this cool, you know, and they've got a couple $1 million business there selling clothing and whatnot that has a unique brand because it's coming from Nebraska, and people around the nation and world want stuff from Nebraska. You know, it's anyhow. So whatever it is, or it could be a trucking business because you've got a handful of trucks and you've been effective about managing, you know, that resource to be optimally used throughout the entire year, not just when you're hauling grain. So anyhow, you think about constantly, and that also helps with the undulations of the especially in row crop, you know, undulating profits of grain. Holy cow. So, you know, having other businesses that have a steady flow, and even guys who bought franchises, you know, that phone call that just came in, by golly, that guy really has about 7 different businesses yeah. and that add up to 9 figures. You know, it blows my mind how innovative and entrepreneurial. And that's one of my favorite books by Peter Drucker, by the way, Innovation and Entrepreneurship, good inspirational read. Along with my books to help grow your business.
Okay. And we're getting close to the end of the podcast, but I think you probably have some resources that you could recommend to, you know, anyone out there that might be looking to become a better leader.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about role clarification and visioneering exercise here. In almost every team I've worked with, and one of the reasons I called my company Echelon Management, is because the importance of getting that leadership team And so even if you're the singular titular leader of your business out there, your farm and the other businesses, the reality is you've got a triumvirate of people with each business, you know, another couple of key players that help you run and lead that business. And how well you're aligned in your roles and what I call role clarity is as critical as objectives being clear and clearly identified and fleshed out in all the areas. And so there's a tool that I have in both my books called the Role Focus 12. And there's another tool called the Role Clarification Exercise. And they serve two different purposes. The Role Clarification Exercise is simply going through 8 questions with your leadership team. And it's one of the best team building exercises out there. And it much better than a ropes course or something like that. But you basically are answering questions like, what are my strengths and weaknesses as it relates to my role as the blank? And strengths and weaknesses in regards to your talent, even your personality, and what your likes and dislikes are. And then finally, it wraps up on the final two questions of currently my role is X, and you'll map out, you know, what percent of time is spent in what, you know, 3 to 6 areas of your role. And but then you finally wrap up with this question being answered, you know, but I'd like to see my role evolve to being this, where I'm spending less time on X and Y and much more time on Z to help accelerate the growth of the business. Now, the leader goes first and answers all those questions, and then the rest of the team chimes in on, you know, with 3 things. You know, here is what I think you should be doing more of, and here's what I think you should be doing less of, and here's how I could help. And that person who just presented is under a ban of silence. And so all they do is say thank you and take notes. And it's amazing what happens in that exercise. It's highly effective at getting people to evolve their role. And then the other thing we need to be doing once every 6 months is instead of doing a annual review, which are painful for both sides of the table there, I use a set of questions called the Role Focus 12. And so the way you use this tool is the manager and the person being managed read through each question and just answer each one with each other in about a 1-hour to 90-minute dialogue. And this does a great job of getting people aligned back on the path of what they should be focused on. And so some questions in there are things like, you know, what are the things that my manager or the company has done that have most empowered me? And what are some things that they have done that have been most disempowering? The top objectives I've accomplished over the last 6 months have been the top objectives I see that I need to be working on the next 6 months are. And as you dialogue back and forth, both of you answering those, you know, the manager going first to help break the ice and help coach the person on how to answer the question. But they're doing it for themselves, not the other person. It's quite illuminative. And just that exercise, I've seen teams greatly improve their performance. And so those are basic responsibilities of leadership that are absolutely critical. And then the final tool is a visioneering set of questions I have that I can in articles that I've published in the top producer magazines over the years that will help you clarify a vision. Because if you don't clarify your vision, you're going to be tossed in the sea of agriculture and not get to your port. And so cast that vision and make it as clear as you possibly can.
And then what advice would you have for someone that is just going into leadership for the first time? You know, that initial, I'm almost going to call it an awkward phase. What would be your advice for them?
Mentors and research. So basically, if you take books like mine, which I think teach leadership in very specific tactical and strategic terms and tools that you can use, like what I just gave you an example of, as well as mentors. So, for example, later today, I'm going to check in with Sandy Costa, who built a company from $90 million to $1.6 billion in 6 years. It's a Fortune 500 company now, Quintiles. And there's a guy that I check in, you know, 4 times a year with. Bring my toughest questions and challenges and get amazing wisdom from a man in his mid-70s who's just as sharp as he ever was. and literally is one of the greatest leaders that people who work for him ever met. But you should have as many mentors as you can effectively manage. And it doesn't take much to have a great mentoring relationship. It can be just 5 minutes, a 5 minute phone call once a month, or a little bit deeper dive once a quarter, like you know, Sandy and I might do. But those mentoring relationships, both within the company you're at or team you're on, and outside of the team you're on, and then that does a lot to protect you if you know, you're a young new leader and you're just an employee somewhere. You know, if something goes wrong at that company and you move on, you've got a network that also can help you in a variety of very practical ways, and not just in giving great advice and wisdom.
Good. And then I think, Mark, I always like to end my podcasts with this one key question, and I'm going to ask it of you, is what is your definition of success in farming?
Joy and growth. I see the best farmers are the ones who, and most do, appreciate this gift from God in the soil. I mean, I tear up when I, you know, think of the answers I've heard over the years from these guys who are so loving and responsible for this soil that they're given, and they protect it for this generation and future generations, and realize it's the backbone of our culture. And nobody, I think, does more for a culture than the military and agriculture. It's the two areas that protect and provide for us, and are our core of our strength. And I would say enjoy it and be grateful for it, and be bold and look at as visionarily as you can in all aspects of this gift that you have to be a manager in agriculture.
Yep, no, totally agree. I mean, that's my family's background. Even though I've been a CPA, I'm back owning farmland because, you know, it gives me joy. And, yeah. I, you know, it's just one of those things that I think you're sort of born with it. And it's, like you say, it's a gift from God. So with that, Mark, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to do this podcast. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
Gratitude. Tell everybody on your team something you are very grateful for. And it's a great exercise, in fact, of kicking off a meeting, having everybody, or closing a meal. Everybody share something they're most grateful for about each other. Great thing to do around the kitchen table with the family as well, telling each person something you're most grateful for.
Okay. Well, again, Mark, thank you very much. This is the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I am Paul Niefer, your host, and signing off.